Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_bball. If you're watching this on YouTube, no, it's not a trick. This is a show straight after another show. Just recorded the Washington Wizards preview. Now I'm going to be doing the Charlotte Hornets season preview as we get through these shows with only a couple of the previews left. I am joined to talk Charlotte Hornets. I'm joined by Brian Mears of Numberfire, At the Hive, and Fantasy Labs, among other places. Brian, how are you going?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. So it's good to have you on. Now, before we get talking Charlotte Hornets, you're a Charlotte fan. Where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm at Brian. It's with a Y. Bryan underscore Mears, Mears.
And what sort of articles you got coming out or recently released at any of these places that you want to give a plug to?
Say that again.
Have you got any articles that are coming out or have just come out recently that you want to give a plug to?
Sure. Yeah, I've actually been most of my time has been spent on football, actually.
Okay.
Over at Fantasy Labs, so we've been working on kind of integrating our football stuff, but we're actually working on our basketball stuff right now, and that is mostly like a daily fantasy stuff for NBA. So we'll have our models out there. A lot of good content at The Hive, which is the Charlotte Hornets blog for SB Nation. And Numberfire was my original site, and they're always doing great basketball stuff. So you can find me any of those places and probably a couple more.
So just if you're following Brian on Twitter, make sure you are, and you can find all the articles and the stuff that he's putting out if you're a football fan, if you're a fantasy basketball guy, if you want to hear more Charlotte Hornets stuff, you can go and find out all the stuff that Brian's doing over on his Twitter account. Now, the Hornets, they were an abject disappointment last season. I think it's fair to say a lot of people were thinking maybe they had a chance at cracking the top four in the East. That clearly didn't go to plan. The big signing of Lance Stephenson turned out to be horrible. I think it's probably a fair way to describe it. They made a lot of moves this offseason to try and correct these problems. What do you think of what they did in the offseason, and how does it position them? Are they a team that is looking to jump back up into the playoffs? Do you think they're a decent chance of that, or are they going to be stuck middling around that 8-10 sort of zone?
I mean, I think they're obviously better than they were a season ago. I mean, honestly, especially on the offensive end, it was hard to get any worse. So I think that they're going to be better next year. The question is, everything in the NBA, really everything in life, is just about opportunity costs. You know, like if you want to get better this year, okay, well, what is it going to cost you? And, you know, they decided to make a couple moves. They flipped Batum or Vonleh for Batum, along with Henderson, and they, you know, made a kind of a win now draft pick in Kaminsky over maybe a potential guy with a higher ceiling in Justice Winslow. So they're going to be better this year. The question is, you know, where are they going to be in 3 or 4 years? You know, I get kind of criticized by some of my Charlotte Hornet fellow fans that I'm a little Sam Hinkie-ish, because I kind of have the opinion if you don't have a good chance of getting into the top of the playoffs and actually doing some damage, then you should be trying to, you know, get down to the bottom of the draft and tank, or whatever you want to call it. I know it's a touchy subject. And you should, you know, be trying to set yourself up for the future. And it seems the Hornets are just kind of okay with being in that middle 8-10 seed range. So I think they're better. How better is the question, I guess.
I think what you said is right. And it feels like that's a lot of coming from sort of the Michael Jordan directive of he doesn't want them to be bad. He wants them to be competitive, but never – he'd obviously want them to be great, but you know, in order for them to be great, you need to probably be bad. Like there are examples of teams never being bad and then being competitive. We think Houston Rockets, and they did that, but a lot has to go right. You need to get a player like James Harden land in your lap, and then Dwight Howard needs to follow it up. It doesn't happen for all these teams very often. So a lot of the time you need to be bad in order to get good. And with Jordan not really seeming to want to commit to that sort of thing, it is going to make it hard. But I agree with you. They did get better. They brought in Nick Batum. They brought in Spencer Hawes. Jeremy Lin, Jeremy Lamb both came across. Tyler Hansbrough and Elliot Williams, who aren't going to play a huge role. Batum was disappointing last season. I think people might... They sort of overstate how bad he was last year. He wasn't as bad as people made out that he was. He was definitely not great, and he was definitely worse than what he'd been previously, but he wasn't as bad as what a lot of people were making out, like he was trash and he's not an NBA starter and he's not a fantasy relevant player, and all that stuff is false. Mm-hmm. I think he's in for a pretty big bounce back season. I'm excited to see what he does in this team. I think he's got a really diverse skill set. His ability to get, you know, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, threes, you know, okay scoring. I think it's very, very useful. And I think that he's going to be, you know, somewhat of an underrated player this year, especially if he starts slipping to outside the top 60. What's your thoughts on Batum coming across? Did you like the fact that they gave up Vonleh? Would you prefer them to keep Vonleh? How did you view this trade?
From being a fan of the Hornets, I wasn't necessarily a fan, mostly just because of the risk of Batum leaving. I know that he's a relationship with Cho, but, you know, giving up a guy who I think I'm still personally really high on Vonleh. I think he's going to have a big year this year. And I think he has a lot of potential. You know, I've talked to some guys who do a lot of analytics for the draft, and they said that they think that Vonleh probably would have been a top five pick in this most recent draft. So if you think about that, you know, you're giving up not only a guy who is on a rookie deal and who probably is the talent of maybe a top four or five pick in this year's draft, top 10 last year because he slid, but you're also flipping him for a guy who really doesn't have any value after this year unless you re-sign him, and that's a question mark. So I think Batum's a great player. And, you know, I think there's a chance that, you know, maybe he really likes it in Charlotte, and he knows Cho pretty well. They're friends outside of basketball, so that's good. So I think that the Hornets have, you know, a pretty good shot at re-signing him, but it's also coming at an interesting time because, you know, that's next year's when the salary cap's going to explode. And so the Hornets are going to be in a weird place where they're kind of taking a chance on a one-year guy, and probably the one offseason they shouldn't, because they're going to be forced to either probably max him out or let him go. And then at that point, you're either stuck with a max guy who, I like Batum, I'm not sure if he's like a $25 million player a year, or you have to let him go, and then you gave up Vonleh for nothing. So I think next offseason is going to be really interesting to see what they do with him.
Yeah, look, that's right. There is a significant risk in that move with Batum leaving and giving up some younger players. And look, the addition of Batum probably doesn't make them a top four team. And if you're giving up a lot of value, you probably want to make yourself into a top four team with that sort of risk. Now, I'm not as high on Vonleh as what you are. I agree that he's definitely got some potential, but I don't know. I'm not as into him as what, look, some people are. I think he's got a lot of sort of split opinions. Some people just don't think that he's going to be much. Some people are quite high on him. But it is, there's definitely risk on there, because we sort of know what Batum is now, and he's a really solid player. He's a step below an all-star sort of player, but Vonleh could become better than that. We don't know. It's all about speculating. He could become better. He might be worse. So this trade, we're not going to know really until the next couple of seasons, until we see what Batum does and until we see what sort of Vonleh can start to become. The other guys who they brought in, I really like the addition of Jeremy Lin after they lost Mo Williams as a solid backup point guard to Kemba Walker. I think he's an interesting guy. Jeremy Lamb has got an opportunity at some sort of redemption after being completely buried in Oklahoma City, and Spencer Hawes coming off a horrible season for the Clippers. Spencer Hawes provides confusion to me. Because I don't know where he's going to play. He has to play sort of backup five behind Al Jefferson, so the minutes aren't going to be there. But they've got so many guys who are similar to him. Big men who stretch the floor. Cody Zeller can stretch the floor. Frank Kaminsky can do that. Marvin Williams can do that. And now Spencer Hawes is here. What did you make of the acquisition of Hawes? Is that just part of the cost of getting rid of Lance Stephenson? Or do you think they intend to use him in a big role?
I mean, I don't know about big role. I think he'll be used. You know, a lot of people think that Kaminsky is going to be a big factor of the offense. I don't think that's going to happen really in this first year, just because rookies it just takes them a while. You know, and I know that Frank is an older player and he played at Wisconsin for 4 years, but even so, just adjusting. And so I think that Kaminsky's not over minutes. So I do think Hawes is going to play probably a pretty significant role. I don't know if he was the price of Lance. You know, I'm sure that, you know, I don't know about that question. I do think that he could be a useful player. I mean, he was a useful player in Philly, had an awful year last year, but can stretch the floor. But you're right, there is kind of a redundancy in their front court. You know, they have guys with a lot of similar skill sets. And that's why I was kind of confused. Like, if you kind of evaluate all the moves that the Hornets did separately, then you can, like, I think maybe you give them all like fair grades, you know, say, okay, I can see why they did that. But then when you combine all the moves into one cohesive offseason picture, then it's a question mark, because then it's like, okay, like, I like that you got a stretch big, but why did you get all of them? You know? So I like the Halls moves, but then why did you get Frank Kaminsky? It just seems odd. That's going to be an interesting storyline to watch this year, just because there's a lot of potential as far as offensive being better in the front court. You know, Al Jefferson just being healthy in the first place, I think, would bring a lot of that. But the ability to stretch it out. Marvin did that a little bit, but the question is going to be, how bad is the defense going to be with those guys on? Because you can't play Jefferson and Halls together, because they would be really bad defensively. And honestly, if you add Kaminsky into that, they're not going to be any good either. Really, the only plus defender is Zeller, and he's kind of the non-stretchy of those guys, even though he can pick and pop at the foul line a little bit. But yeah, that's going to be really interesting to watch, I think.
They lost Bismack Biyombo, who was their biggest defensive presence. Mm-hmm. He was a complete non-factor on offense, but he was their, by far and away, their best defensive big man, but he's gone. There's no one who really, the rim protection is going to be an issue. Look, Zeller can do that to a degree, but Kaminsky's not going to be a rim protector. Spencer Hawes can block shots, but he's not really an intimidating rim protector or anything like that. It's going to be interesting to see the way they do that. Now, the guys that they lost, I mentioned Biyombo. Mo Williams has gone. He had a little cameo last season and put up some really nice numbers when Kemba Walker went down. Gerald Henderson is no great loss to me at all. He's not a good player, in my opinion. What's your take on Henderson from watching him from the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. People over at the Hive give me crap all the time, because Henderson drives me so crazy. Oh, I mean, he's really athletic. He's really athletic, and I think he is a hard worker, especially on the defensive end. So I appreciate that. I honestly think that he is a really good player playing in the wrong era. He's kind of just, you could tell that he watched Kobe growing up, so he's all about that, like, little turn right and then go on to the 15-foot on the baseline fadeaway. And the defense gives him that every time, and he takes it every time, and that's great if you're playing in the 90s. But playing in 2015 with Steph Curry and all these guys who are, you know, pace and space and going to let you have that, it just doesn't work. So, he's kind of an enigma for me, because I appreciate the hustle. I appreciate his defense. But watching him on the offensive end, I yelled at my TV a lot last year.
He's not someone that I'm a fan of. And I think everything you said there hits a nail on the head. He's a player from a sort of a bygone era. He can't stretch the floor. He just, look, he has some highlight reel dunks at times, but it's not getting it done. And losing him is no big, great loss. We touched on Vonleh already. Lance Stephenson was a disaster last season. I think most Charlotte people will be glad to see the back of him. It's not like they invested a huge amount in him, because the contract was pretty decent and pretty small for a guy who was coming off sort of a breakout year. But I think most Charlotte people will be pretty glad to see the back of him.
I 100% agree. Yeah, I think that the NBA is tough, because I mean, you can, I don't know, like, I, at the time I liked the Stephenson signing. Like, I appreciated that it was small. I mean, it was only 2 years at $8 million. The NBA is just such a game of luck sometimes. Like, we talk about the fact that, like, even before, when we were saying that, you know, if you don't have a chance to win, then you should be bad. Well, you look at it, the Hornets were bad. They had the worst season of all time in NBA history. They only won like 7 games, and they, like, should have gotten the number one. If they were in the NFL, they would have gotten the number one pick. And if you don't pick that year, is Anthony Davis. Yeah. So just, you know, maybe a parallel universe out there. The Hornets are the number one or two seed in the East, and they have Anthony Davis and all as well. But, you know, in this reality, sometimes the ping pong balls don't go your way. Sometimes Lance Stephenson doesn't work out. They offered Gordon Hayward a contract, and they matched. Yep. When the question was how good Gordon Hayward was, and You know, sometimes a lot of these things are luck. It's, you know, are you good in the good years? Are you bad in the good years? Or, you know, there's so many variables and factors into building an NBA roster. And so it's a interesting thing. I think Hornets fans are probably glad Lance is gone. But I also am not going to pretend that I wasn't a fan of the signing in the first place.
No, I think that's the fair way to look at it, because when you're signing, this is a bargain deal. He's got that team option as well, which is something which not many people anticipated he'd be able to get. But now that it's happened, they're like, fine, he's out of here, good. I think that's the way that it should be approached by most people looking at this. Now, I just had a question come through from Andres Herrera, who's watching this live, Brian. And his question is, who's the number one player to pick up from the Hornets in a roto league?
In a roto league,
I say it's Al Jefferson marginally ahead of Batum.
I would have Batum ahead. I think that Batum is going to have a really, really good bounce back year. I mean, if you think about, I don't know how long you've been playing fantasy basketball. I've been playing it for a while.
Even 2 years ago.
So you know Batum. Even 2 years ago, Batum was like a top 2 or 3 round pick. I mean, he was a top 30 guy. And he was kind of think of like what Kawhi Leonard is in fantasy. He was kind of like the original guy of that, the guy that could potentially give you a 5x5, who contributes in literally every category. He can give you 5 assists, 5 steals, 5 blocks. He can get you anything in a week, and he doesn't hurt you in any category. And then I think last year was a down year, so people are just having a lot of recency bias. But I kind of attribute that all to this wrist thing that was bothering him.
I do too.
And the fact that, you know, yeah. And I just think it was completely injury, and the fact that, you know, he, was kind of the number four or five option in Portland. And I think that to look to him, I think he might even be a better creator than Kemba, to be honest. So I think they're going to look to him in a lot of pick and roll situations and in creative situations. I think they're going to let him play with the first team, but also I think they're going to use him in that Lance role that they hoped Lance was going to be in, and let him play with the second unit a lot and be the kind of the de facto point guard of the second unit. So I expect Batum to put up a lot of stats this year in a lot of categories. So I'm really high on him. I think he's going to get back into that top 30-40 range.
Okay. I've got him sort of just outside the top 50, but I agree that he has been a fantastic player. And what we look at from him is the points. He was at 9.4 points last season. So you're going to hear the narrative of people, you know, posting on message boards or Twitter or whatever, I don't want a guy, he doesn't score. But that's not him. The previous 4 seasons, he was at 13, 14.3 points, 14 and 12.5 points. And while they're not great numbers, they're good enough. And he saw his field goal attempts decrease last season. And again, his field goal percentage decreased, his attempts decreased. And I think that his attempts decreased because his percentage decreased, because of his wrist. He wasn't shooting well. He knew he wasn't shooting well, so he wasn't shooting as much. Yeah. I think he takes that back up another step. Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, if you look at his 2012-13 season, he was a top 20 fantasy guy, 14 points, 2.5 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.2 steals, 1.1 blocks. Like, they're crazy good numbers, and he's not washed up. I'm a massive, massive fan of Nick Batum. I think that he's so underrated by people. Last season, people were saying, you got to drop him, you can't hold him on your roster. And that was that was just the biggest load of crap I've ever heard. Because, yeah, he was scoring 9 points a game. But you know what? Points are one category. And the guy was giving you 5 assists a game. He was giving you 6 rebounds a game. Yep. He was giving you over half a block. He was giving you over a steal. He was still hitting 1.5 threes a game. He does so much in so many areas. Look, him and Jefferson, and Jefferson's another guy I think is going to have a real bounce back season this year as well, because he was obviously plagued by that knee injury. There's a little bit more risk with Jefferson, I think, maybe that he might be starting to hit the downside of his career, which I don't think we're at that area with Batum. But both of those guys, I think, are going to be pretty decent roto guys. And Batum really thrives in a roto setting. He's a fantastic roto guy, a much better roto guy than he is a head-to-head player, but you can still definitely build around him in head-to-head leagues. You just got to use his strengths to your advantage. Now, before that question
came up, go ahead. Yeah, sorry. I was just going to say, I 100% agree on Batum. He's definitely a great roto guy because, again, he can't hurt you anywhere. I would say that if when people ask me fantasy basketball advice, you know, kind of like which category should I go for, or, you know, what's a good strategy? Honestly, probably the number one thing that I could tell people is pretend points when you're drafting, pretend points don't exist, because there's scarcity of positions, and points are the most replaceable position, replaceable stat. Like, you look at a guy like, I don't know, like Jamal Crawford, who you can get at the end of the round or end of the draft, and he's going to put up 15 points a game and get you literally nothing else.
Yep.
But the guys that can get you 5 assists, which are incredibly rare, and the guys can get you, you know, a steal and a half and a block and a half, that, like, those stats are more important because of the scarcity of them. Like, just so if I could give one advice to people, it's like, pretend points don't exist. Come, like, if a guy's in a game, he's going to score. Or you could just get a guy at the end, like a J.R. Smith or a Crawford or whoever, who you can just get and plug in if you just need points. But yeah, I just ignore points because that's dumb. Batum does everything else.
Yeah. Now, points are, I say this all the time, they're the most overrated category because they're the biggest number. And people look at a box score, they're the first thing that appears on a box score. And people see the number and go, 20 points. 20 is a big number. 20 is a bigger number than 2, but 2 steals is better than 20 points from a fantasy point of view in terms of its overall value and scarcity and ability to contribute. And the ability to average 20 points pushes people so high up in some of the rankings. Like, Andrew Wiggins is going to get overdrafted like crazy this season. I saw a league the other day, he got picked at pick 36. And to me, that's insane. I don't know what your take is on Wiggins, but to me, that's insanity to pick him that high when he's literally a scorer. He's not getting many rebounds, assists are low, steals are okay. Like, he doesn't do anything else apart from scoring at this point. And it just influences so many things, and it makes punting points a really interesting way to look at leagues as well, where you can grab a lot of these undervalued guys at significant discounts, because I said points are so valued by another guy. Last year, I was doing the Bulls podcast a couple of days ago. Tony Snell, when he got the start last year, he'd go out there and score 18 points or 15 points, and people were like, I need to grab Tony Snell. But he would go 15 points and he'd go 1 rebound, 0 assists, and do nothing. And that helps you a little bit, but it's not, oh my God, we need to get this guy, he's going to be awesome. And then it down values guys like Nick Batum and another guy who we're probably going to touch on a little bit later on, in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Let's talk younger players on this team, or specifically guys from the last two drafts. There's not many on this roster after the trade of Vonleh. PJ Hairston, who was picked in the 2014 draft, and Frank Kaminsky for this season. Let's start with Hairston. What's your thoughts on him? Do you have any... Look, we know he's dealt with off-the-court problems. He showed some flashes last season. He's going to find it hard to get minutes with the addition of Batum and the addition of Jeremy Lamb. I thought that maybe he was a chance to be a 20-minute a game sort of guy, but then they brought these other players in. I don't see that they've got a huge amount of faith in Hairston. Do you see something that maybe brings it forward for the next couple of seasons for Hairston, and he can become a contributing role player?
That's a great question. I really want him to be. So I've got to answer this question without bias. So I'm going to try to do that. Because I'm also a big UNC Tar Heel college basketball fan, and obviously he played at Carolina. So I have kind of bias times two. I think that they brought him in because he was a steal at that part of the draft, in that he projected to be an incredible shooter, and he was putting up a lot of great numbers in the D League. And that would be something that would really help the Hornets. Unfortunately, he came in and was not a good shooter at all.
No, not at all.
You know, he couldn't hit a three. But the thing is his mechanics are still really good. Like, his form is pure. You know, when he actually gets looks, you know, he can knock him down. And he was bad defensively last year, but I think that's just the case with all rookies. But he had glimpses where he's a big physical guy. I mean, he's obviously a guard, but he's kind of in like that Kyle Lowry mode where he can bully you a little bit and get some blocks. So I'm not sure. I don't think he's ever going to be a star, but there is, you know, question marks of, okay, maybe like his form looks good enough where you think maybe if the Hornets had a little more spacing and he wasn't taking contested threes, maybe some of those go in, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's a much more valuable guy. And maybe just a year in Clifford's system, and he's a better team defender. I think he's an okay individual defender, but the team defense, I think, maybe is something that's tough to pick up at an NBA level, which I guess is probably intuitive. So I think there's hope. I really do. I mean, like, if you look at his skills, I think that they look like an NBA player. You know, the question is he can he focus? Can he keep his nose clean? And can he, you know, just, I guess, be put in a situation that's going to kind of maximize his skills? And I think maybe with the front court having some shooting, we actually might see him. I don't know how much he's going to play, you're right, because of Batum, but I think he might be able to take a little bit of a step, even if it's just getting, you know, 15 minutes here and knocking down a couple of threes. I actually kind of like his long-term prospects better than Lamb.
No, I do too.
If that says anything.
No, I do, yeah, as well. So. I think that Hairston can be a real, yeah, decent contributor. And the thing that you look like about him with the way the NBA is going is he took over 50% of his shots were from three. Now, he didn't convert them at a high rate. He was only at 30% from three, only 32% from the field. But you know, over 50% of his shots were from deep. That's where he's going to be able to carve his role out. And he, you know, he was obviously not afraid to do that. I think that he's got a body, yep, similar to, not exactly the same, but sort of like a Shabazz Muhammad sort of size as well. Like he's a strong sort of guy. He can go down there. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, at some point in his career he's a five and a half rebound a game sort of player as well. Because he does have some strength. The threes are going to be where it's at, though. He averaged 2.6 threes per 36 minutes last season, which is obviously a pretty decent amount. He's a really good free throw shooter as well, converted those at 86%. Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of hope for PJ Hairston. It might not come this year, but if you're in a deep sort of dynasty league, I think he's going to have some value down the track. Now, what about Frank Kaminsky? How does he fit into this front court? I don't know what they're going to do. I'm a fan of Zeller. I don't think many people are really fans of Zeller, but I'm a fan of Cody Zeller. Him and Kaminsky, Marvin Williams, we touched on Spencer Hawes. How does it work out? What happens with this front court? You know, Kaminsky, is he already at his ceiling? Can he get any better from here? I didn't get the pick when it was made. I don't really understand how it's going to work now. How do you see Kaminsky for this season and moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. Asking a Hornets fan / blogger, writer, whatever, what you think of Kaminsky is a dangerous question, man. It's tough to answer that question because, you know, you get really mad at the pick, and I admittedly was really mad at the pick. I Winslow fell, and I couldn't believe it, and I really wanted him. And the fact that they had such tunnel vision and took Kaminsky anyway really frustrated me. But the fact is that now Kaminsky's on the team, so now we have to evaluate him as opposed to just keep on being mad. So, all right, so let's think about what he can contribute going on. I don't think he's going to contribute a ton this year, to be honest, just because a lot of it is because of the depth. And honestly, I think there's just a tough adjustment for rookies. I think sometimes we undervalue how tough it is to be good as a rookie.
It's extremely
even
tough.
Like Andrew. Yeah, I mean, everyone was like, oh, he's amazing. But if you look at him, he's completely inefficient. He was struggled in a lot of games. And, like, you'll see glimpses at a rookie, but you're not actually going to get any steady play. And for a team that wants to be in the playoffs, you know, you need steady play. I'm a big Zeller guy. I mean, he was, I'm not even sure. I think I have it pulled up here. He was, top five, top 10 or something in real plus minus. So he
– Yeah, it was
high. He was fifth. Yeah, he was fifth in real plus minus, plus 4.35 out of all powerful. Guy that he's not going to put up stats, but just contributes in a lot of ways. He extends possessions by tipping out rebounds. He is always good at cutting, sets great screens. You know, I think I get kind of mad at Clifford, even though I think Clifford's an amazing coach, that he doesn't make Cody more of a focal part of the offense, because I think that he showed in Indiana that he could be. And maybe that comes. I don't know. So that's going to be interesting. I do think Kaminsky, you're asking if he can improve. I do think he can. I don't think that just because you're a 4-year player doesn't mean that you can improve. I think that Kaminsky's game is probably better suited to the NBA than college, actually. And he was obviously a really good college player. And with where, you know, the NBA is going, I think that he has a really nice role set out for him. I don't think he'll bust. I don't think he'll be a superstar, but I think he'll be a really useful player for Charlotte for a while. You know, the question is, you know, what did you get him for? Did you get him for this year? Because if so, then I don't think that was necessarily a great pick, if you know, if you got him because you wanted to compete this year because he was more ready. If you got him because you think he'll be the better player in 5 years, then that's fine. If you think that, I disagree. You know, I think Winslow will be, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see his development. Obviously, I feel bad for the dude because like everyone in Charlotte wanted Winslow. So now like the first time that he struggles, it's almost like Anthony Bennett, you know, that we've seen that situation. It's, yeah, you know, if a team reaches for you and the makes the fan base mad, like they'll turn on you real quick. So I'm going to be interested to see how Kaminsky handled that. He's a cool dude. I mean, he's got a great sense of humor and I think he can play a lot of it off, but yeah, that'll be interesting to see this year. I think Cody is definitely the number one option as far as power forward. And I think he'll get the majority of the minutes and should. I think he's probably significantly ahead of any of their other power forward options. But you know, it'll be interesting to see in his probably 10 minutes a game if Kaminsky can do anything relevant or show glimpses that he could, you know, be a really useful player down the line.
So you've got Kaminsky that low at only 10 minutes a game. So I think that he's going to play more than that. Like, I agree. I think Zeller is clearly the better option. I was really disappointed with the way that Clifford used Zeller last season. Yeah, he made the move and finally started him, but then he would start him and play him so few minutes, and then Marvin Williams would come off the bench. And don't get me started on Marvin Williams, because he's one of my sources of frustration in the league. I don't understand why he would start Zeller and then bring Williams off the bench and play Zeller limited minutes. I just wanted Zeller to go out there, play 30 minutes, start to develop, because he could be a guy that he can get block shots. He could start to hit threes. Maybe he won't, but he's an efficient scorer. He's got a good offensive game. He's a decent free throw shooter. I thought he could be a really useful guy, but he only ended up playing 24 minutes a game last season. And that just wasn't enough, especially when the opportunity was there. There was such a big opening, and Marvin Williams shouldn't be filling anyone's opening. And that sounds completely rude, and I didn't mean that to sound that way. But Zeller should be the guy who was getting those minutes, and now Kaminsky confuses it. So ideally, I think that Zeller gets 30 minutes, but just with the way the hesitancy of using him last season and then bringing another guy into the same position, I'm worried that they're going to go, okay, well, Cody's not the guy. He's going to be that 22, 23 minute a game guy, and it's not going to be enough. And that's what concerns me. I don't think Kaminsky's going to be good as a rookie. Rookies generally aren't. He does have a relatively fantasy-friendly game because he will hit threes, he will block some shots, he'll get some rebounds, he'll score efficiently as well. And if Kaminsky finds himself into a 29-minute-a-game role, then he becomes fantasy-relevant for standard leagues. I don't think he should, I don't think he will, but there is that possibility. But that's what remains up in the air to me, is I just don't know what Clifford is going to do with using those guys, because, as I said, Zeller had the opportunity last year and was never able to either grab it or was never able to be given that role of you go out and develop for a big chunk of time.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that Clifford really values defense. And so I think that's, you know, we hear a lot of coaches when people say coaches don't like playing rookies. I don't think necessarily that's true. I think it's they don't like playing guys who suck at defense. Yep. And rookies, I think, struggle with defense the most. I think, you know, you have rookies that come in that have good shots and they can do some things on offense. I think the toughest thing to develop is defense. So it's not even about rookies, just the fact that it takes a while. Like, these guys are so much better than you're playing against in college, and it takes some time. Like, I'm not sure. Like, can you imagine Kaminsky going up against Blake Griffin when the Clippers come in town? Like, that's
he's going to get destroyed.
Griffin's going to smoke him.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he's going to get a ton of minutes, and I don't think he should. And I don't think Clifford, I think Clifford really values defense. And I agree that I was frustrated at Cody not playing more. But I do think that Clifford values defense, and I think that he's going to see that Zeller gives them the best chance at rim protection. I mean, he's really the only chance at rim protection. If they're going to be good on defense, that him and MKG playing a ton of minutes is really their only chance at being a good defense.
Well, that brings me on to the next section, and I want to talk breakout players. So who's the guy that you think takes the step on this team and has a career season? I say that that's what brings me to this, is because the guy I've got down is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, but I want to hear who you've got, who's the player who's taking a step this year to become that breakout player.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the one that we all wanted to be, and we wanted it to be for the last couple of years, is MKG. I do think that he has a good chance of doing that. I think that he's already probably a top five defender in the NBA, even though he probably doesn't get the credit for it. I think he's right there with Kawhi and Paul George in terms of actual defense prowess on the perimeter. So his value is already like, you know, there's a floor set where your value could be, and he's already like super high because of that defense. When you're a top five defender, you're really valuable, even if you do nothing on offense. Yep. The problem is he's one of those guys who does nothing on offense. I mean, he's good at finding some cuts, and his jumper actually looked really good last year. I don't think the issue is even really his jumper anymore. I think it's just all confidence. I mean, this is a guy who didn't take a three last year. You know, even though he'll take him in practice, I think he can hit him, and he was taking shots that were just a couple feet inside. I think it was a confidence thing. It was just, you know, 2 feet inside, you know that it's a jumper, and he practiced it, and he can get into rhythm and step into it. And he feels comfortable with that because he did that with Price. But being behind that line, it's almost like a psychological thing. And I think that you look down and you see that line, you know it's a three-pointer, you know it's far away, and it's just tough to take that. And I think that he's been working on that. He is one of the hardest workers in the NBA. I got a chance to talk to him before, and he's a really nice guy and a really hard worker. And so I do think that he is kind of the obvious breakout candidate, because I think that really all he's missing is just the confidence. I think he has the skills now. It's just whether, you know, they manifest themselves, you know, with him being confident, being willing to take that jumper.
Look, everything you said there is spot on with him. And his shot looked so much better last season. And that's awesome for him that he was able to look. I always say that if someone is going to improve something and you see them improving, it's okay. He's improving his shot, but it means a lot of other things. It means, you know, his dedication to the game, his ability to improve other areas. And he's an awesome rebounder mm-hmm. for a small forward. You know, 7.5 rebounds a game last season in only 29 minutes is fantastic. He's a fantastic defender, as you mentioned. He's a top five perimeter defender in the league. I've got no doubt about that. Maybe even higher than that. He is that awesome. And you see that reflected in the stats in terms of win-loss record when he doesn't play. It is ludicrously tilted towards, you know, losing when he doesn't play because of what he provides. The thing that, you know, from a fantasy breakout point of view is it doesn't translate into stats. But I think that there's a chance that it comes, and he, you know, if, you know, something changes, he could start getting those steals. Half a steal a game and 0.7 blocks a game is so minuscule for a guy who is an elite perimeter defender. Now that could become 1.5 steals, 1 block, and I don't think either of us would go, that's surprising, because it would make sense with the way that he's able to play defense and his ability to anticipate movement. It makes sense. It just hasn't been able to translate it into numbers. And if that happens, then his fantasy value goes through the roof, because he can be a bad shooter all he wants, and he's not a great shooter, but post All-Star break, yeah, when you're hitting 48% of your shots from the field and 77% of your shots from the free throw line, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're not taking threes or you're not taking long-range shots or your jumper looks ugly. In fantasy, if you're converting 48% of your shots, you're converting 48% of your shots, and that's all that matters. And if he hits the shots that he knows he can take, that's efficiency as well. Like, shooting threes is efficiency because you get that, you know, 1.5 times the amount of points, whatever. But it's also efficiency if you're hitting the shots you know you can take, because you're actually converting them at a higher rate and you're getting more points. So there's value in that. And if he and the steps that he's taken, look, maybe he does start to hit a three. Maybe he gets 0.2, 0.3 a game. That's going to be an added bonus. The increased percentages which he showed down the stretch were great. Big rebounds. Defensive numbers could come up. You know, even in the last month of last season, he was at 1.3 blocks a game. And you go, okay, now we're starting to get something happening here. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you don't want to rely on him being a top 100 player, but picking him in the last couple of rounds of a fantasy draft, I think there's significant upside for him. Again, hitting into the fourth season, he's such a young player. Is he barely turned 22?
21.
He's only 21. He's so young. Yeah. There's so much to like about him.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a lot of upside. I think the steals part of his game is interesting, because you're right. He is a little bit lower than some of the guys who perimeter defenders like Kawhi and Paul George and even like Draymond. And I know he's considered a big, but I think it's – you have to look at – you know, why is he not getting the steals that those guys are if they're on equal playing fields as far as defense? And I think the answer is, who are they playing with? You know, Draymond has Clay, you know, Kawhi has the Spurs. I mean, he has Pop. And I think that MKG spent a lot of time covering up the other Hornets' flaws, because he was playing with Kemba, he was playing with a bunch of guys, he was playing with PJ and stuff, guys that just really weren't great defenders. So instead of focusing on kind of locking down his guy and getting those steals that Kawhi and Paul George and Draymond can get, because they can focus on their guy and getting those steals and blocks and doing that, MKG kind of had to, you know, be a floor manager. He had to, you know, he had to play off his man just a little bit. He's good enough where he could recover, which is incredible that he was so good and able to recover fast enough. But he was kind of guarding three guys on the perimeter at all times, which just took him, you know, maybe a step back, which probably takes him out of the range to get steals, allows him to recover to contest, but maybe not get steals. And I think Batum is a great defender.
Yeah, Batum's going to help that tremendously.
Yeah, so I think just the fact that he doesn't have to guard Batum's guy and he can stick on his guy a little bit more, I think we're going to see an increased steal percentage just based on that fact alone.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what Batum and Kidd Gilchrist can do on the wings, because they could realistically just shut down opposing wing players pretty comfortably, because they're both exceptional defenders. Batum's got the length, Kidd Gilchrist the anticipation. There's so much about this pairing that I really like. And the fact is that you're pairing Kidd Gilchrist with Batum, who can hit threes. You know, Lance Stephenson couldn't hit a three, but Batum can go. And the other thing that I've mentioned in previous podcasts is, okay, Kidd Gilchrist can't hit a three, but the guy next to him, Batum, can. The guy on the other side, whether it's Kaminsky, Marvin Williams, Cody Zeller, they can stretch the floor. So they are stretching the floor. Bring Spencer Hawes in. He can stretch the floor as well. And Kidd Gilchrist plays closer to the basket. The big man steps out. They change things around. I think the way that they're developing the team is, for this season in particular, they should see a lot more improvements. And Kidd Gilchrist is the guy that I can't wait to see what he does. What about a sleeper player, Brian?
Yeah, it's
I'll go ahead.
I'll get to a sleeper player in a second. It is interesting, you know, the way that the Hornets have their roster, because you normally think of like an ideal basketball team or an ideal five-man unit. You know, you have your point guard and you have your wings, and then you have your center, and you would like shooting out of the first four spots, right? Kind of like how the old Orlando Magic teams, where we have Dwight in the middle, but then you surround him with four shooters. So you have rim protection, but you also have shooting everywhere except for the post player and all that on offense. And I think the Hornets actually kind of have that this year. It's just in a very unorthodox way, because I think MKG is almost their rim protector.
Yep.
And he's their non-shooter. So if you just kind of, I'm not a big position guy anyway, and if you kind of just look at skills, you could almost say that if you play Cody and maybe Halls together, that MKG is actually the center in that lineup, where he's protecting the rim and he's the non-shooter that's kind of putting and being in the lane, and then you have everyone else that can space the floor. So that is really interesting to think about, just the fact that there's different way to build lineups, and you could still kind of optimize what makes an offense and defense good just from different positions. I think MKG is good enough to do that. If we're talking sleepers, that's a good question. I guess it depends on what you mean by sleeper, like a guy who's going to outperform his value, or
I think a guy that's going to outperform his draft spot. So it can be a guy that you can either view it as a guy that might not get drafted, you might take a flyer on, or a guy who's going to be 10, 20 spots higher than his draft position, just somewhere where you're going to get value for a player.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Kemba is going to be better this year, just because the fact that he may not have to do everything.
Yeah, Kemba's the guy.
You know, I think Batum's going to help him. Yeah, I think Batum's going to help him just with a lot of the ball handling ability. Kemba just hasn't had anyone around that could help. The lineups with Lance were actually pretty good last year in terms of Lance being able to distribute and the players playing around him. Okay, Lance was just so bad shooting that it didn't matter. You couldn't make up for it. So I think you have substitute him in for Batum, who can do both. I think you kind of release Kemba, let him play off the ball a little bit, and I think his shooting will progress up. So I think he's a candidate. I'm not sure, you know, if he's. I think he'll probably end up around where he's drafted. I think he's got some upside. I would say a guy that I think has some potential is Lin. I think that he's in just a really good spot. I'm honestly not sure how the Hornets got him at his deal, but he's kind of an ideal fit for them as a guy who can just create and get into the lane and then kick out to shooters and just kind of do his thing. And I think Clifford was going to allow him to do that. He kind of gave Mo freedom last year, and I think he's going to give Lynn the same. You know, we've seen Lynn be a really useful fantasy player when getting 15, 20 minutes a game. If they allow him to be that, the problem is at the Lakers, they weren't allowing him to do anything. You know, he would just, they just kind of took him out of what made him good. And I think Clifford's going to put him back in that spot. So, obviously he's probably not a standard guy, but if you're in a deep league where you're going to have to play guys who are six men and off the bench, I think Lynn will probably outperform his values as well.
That allows me to transition into my 15th separate Ronnie Price rant for the Lakers. The fact that Ronnie Price got minutes ahead of Jeremy Lin last year was an absolute travesty. And Lin, look, he's currently being drafted at pick 137. I've got him projected at 22 minutes a night, and that puts him inside the top 140, even at 22 minutes a night. So as the last pick in a 12-team league or a 14-team league, I think you get some value with Lin. But Kemp is the guy that I'm high on. He's getting picked at pick 67, and I know that his field goal percentage has been horrific, and he's taken a lot of attempts, and it hurts that category. But if you're in a head-to-head league, you want a punt field goal percentage, he's a top 40 player because the scoring is there, the threes are there, rebounds are pretty good, assists are solid, good steal numbers, half a block is really key as well, good free throw percentage, and the turnovers are so low. If you're in a nine-category league, he was at 1.6 turnovers a game as a starting point guard. That is exceptionally low. He's not a high turnover guy. So if you're in a nine-category league, that is a big thing. Now, if you're looking at his field goal percentage, it hurts. He's got a Z score of negative 2.41 last season on his field goal percentage, and that is hard to come back from. It's not as bad as an Andre Drummond, DeAndre Jordan free throw percentage, but it's not that far away. It's close to it. It makes him really hard to deal with in a roto league, so I've got him way down the list in a roto league because you really have to balance that out with some other high volume, high percentage field goal players. But if you draft him, and I drafted him a lot last year, and it really hurt when he got injured down the stretch, but I had him a lot. If you're punting your field goal percentage, he has significant value. Your scoring, all those things that I mentioned, you can get a lot of value out of Kemba Walker. And I'm a big Kemba Walker fan. Me and Matt Smith, who's on the podcast often, we debate Kemba Walker quite a lot. Matt hates him. I'm a big fan of Kemba, though. I had Kemba ahead of Jeff Teague by, I think, one spot in my rankings, and Matt was really angry with that for head-to-head leagues. But I said, look, I think he does more if you're discounting his field goal percentage, which again, you pretty much have to do to be able to roster him on your team.
I mean, yeah, I agree with Kemba over Teague anyway, but I'm not even sure if you're going to have to do that as much this year, just because, I mean, again, like we were talking about MKG and his steals, I think when you're looking at players and you're looking at, you know, where they contribute and what's going on, whether a player is really good or really bad or what, you have to look at the context of what situation they were in and why they were there and why their stats were that. And I think Kemba was a guy, if you look, I mean, even on like Basketball Reference, you can look at the percentage of their shots, or SportVU, the percentage of their shots that came within like the last 3 seconds of the shot clock.
Exactly.
And Kemba was one of the highest in the NBA, if not the highest in the NBA, I think. So that just tells you that the Hornets offense was really, really bad because he was playing with Henderson, who was a non-shooter. He was playing with MKG, who was a non-shooter. He was playing with an injured Al Jefferson. So a lot of the possessions just ended up being, hey, crap, we got 5 seconds left. Kemba, just like, please do something so we even have it, like, just get a shot up. So I think there's a pretty good reason why Kemba was a bad shooter. Do I think he's going to be an amazing shooter ever, even if he plays with the Spurs? No, I don't think he has a great form, and I don't think that he's going to ever be that. But I think that he could get close to average with better spacing, and I think there's a good chance that they have.
I think there's a chance that he gets over 40% for this season. I don't think that's completely crazy to think, but you're right. He was just, and the other thing about him in taking those late shot clock shots was the fact that he had the responsibility of, like, I'm willing to do this. I need to do this for the team. It wasn't like he wasn't Nick Young. He wasn't Brandon Jennings just taking horrific shots. He was, with 17 seconds left, he wasn't dribbling up and just hoisting shots. Well, that happens sometimes, but it wasn't that was the cause of everything happening and just taking contested shots for the sake of it. It's because everything was breaking down. Oh my God, give it to Kemba. And he'll go, okay, I'll try and do something. It worked sometimes. It didn't work other times. I really like Kemba. I still think he's tremendously underrated. What about an overvalued player, a guy who you think is probably going a little bit high in drafts? Is there someone that you see on this team?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Overvalued. That's a good question. I think just kind of as a whole, they're probably a little undervalued just because of the fact that I think that people just think of the Hornets and they think, oh man, they suck.
It's small market syndrome. I did the Raptors podcast with Russell yesterday, and again, the Raptors are one of those teams. The Jazz are one of those teams. The Hornets are one of those teams that they all get underrated because they're smaller teams, and it's something you can take advantage of in fantasy. Definitely, we touched on Batum already, Kemba already. These guys, Kid Gilchrist, they're going to have more value than where you draft them. The only guy that I look at, Al Jefferson at pick 39. Maybe I don't want to invest a pick 39 at him.
If he's 39, then that's too high for me.
Yeah. 50, I'm okay with. But 39 feels a little bit too high. But that's the only one. Everyone else, I go, look, you can get 4 rounds value on Kemba in some spots. You can get some value on Batum, potentially another 20 spots of value on him. Jefferson's the one I'm a little bit cautious of. But you're going to have him slip. And if he slips outside the top 50, then I'm happy with it. Because I do think that he'll be better than last season. Does he ever go back to being a top 20 guy? That's probably doubtful, given the way that his age and the way that his career is progressing. But it's not completely crazy to think that.
No, I don't think so. I am a little bit worried. I wouldn't take him to 39 for two reasons. One, just being the injury risk and the age risk. You know, that's just a little risky for me. If I'm in a top couple rounds, I would rather take someone with not only a little more safety but maybe a little more upside. The other thing that bothers me is Clifford has been pretty vocal this summer about not wanting to revolve the offense around Jefferson so much this coming year. It was just, I think that was not only was it their shooting, but it was also because they had so much predictability in their offense. They had success just pounding the ball into Jefferson 2 years ago and got to the playoffs. Then as a result, I think it was just like, all right, let's roll it back, let's do the same thing. And defenses just are just too smart for that. I mean, I think we're seeing the smartest defenses we've ever seen in the NBA, and they just pounding it down low. I don't think post-ups are inefficient or that they should die or anything like that. But I think that if you're relying on them as your number one source of offense, defenses are just going to double down, and then, what was he going to talk to? I do think that there is risk in that maybe he doesn't get as many shots as he did 2 years ago, but I also think it might help his efficiency because, he might be able to like kick out to a shooter and they actually make a shot.
That's true.
So I think it might just be kind of net value. So I think 50 is probably fair.
Now, what about a player who's limited by their playing time? Is there someone on this team that you go, okay, if they're getting 30 minutes, they're going to jump into significant fantasy value? Is it a career player we've already spoken about? But who's a guy that you say that, look, if we see them get 30 minutes, you want to make sure you're grabbing?
So you're going to really just any of the front court players. I'm probably going to stay away from the front court unless that happens, honestly. And whatever guy it is, I think. If it's Marvin, I still probably stay away.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, but if it's either Halls, Zeller, I think if Halls or Kaminsky gets to 25, I think they're both intriguing. I think if Zeller gets to 30, then he's intriguing. And I think it's definitely possible that one of those three scenarios happens. The problem is when you're drafting, you don't know which one it is. I would bank on Zeller. And then I would probably rank them, the possibilities happening. I would Zeller, Halls, and then Kaminsky. They all have high upsides if they got the minutes. I mean, if you look at Halls, he was a top guy in Philly when they ran the offense through him.
Yeah, he was at 2 threes a game, points, rebounds, blocks, percentages. He was awesome.
Yeah, he's great. And I think Kaminsky could be kind of a similar player, maybe not the blocks, but he could do a little bit of everything on offense if he got the minutes. I think there's a really small chance that he gets the minutes. I mean, I'm talking 5-10%.
Okay.
So I would kind of rank him that way. That's the problem is if I knew which player it was, then I would be all for it. The problem is there's just so much doubt about which guy's going to be.
Yeah, like I had Zeller down as that guy as well. And I said, if he gets 30 minutes, then you're going to want to get a part of him. And it's the same thing with Kaminsky and Hawes. If they get the minutes, they're going to be able to produce in that sort of situation. Who's your favorite player on this current team, Brian?
My favorite player. Well, that's a fun question because it's also my favorite player in the NBA, which is MKG.
Okay.
So, not a hard question, but that's just because I mean that's just a little homerism, and I'll admit it. You know, I've got to write a lot about the Hornets to cover them. I've got to go to see them as media, and I've got to sit down and talk with MKG and talk to the players. So I just I really enjoy talking with him and kind of have a soft spot for him. And you know, he's gone through a lot. I don't know if you read the SI Lee Jenkins piece on him from a couple years ago, but there's just so much that he's had to overcome. You know, with being a high guy out of high school, but a guy who's flawed, but just such a hard worker. And he actually, you know, has a stutter problem that he's had to overcome, and he's been taking lessons and now is very involved in some foundations about helping people, who have difficulty speaking and everything. So he does a lot. He does so much for the community of Charlotte that people don't hear about just because he's not maybe the star that some of these other guys are. But I think he's just an incredible person outside of the basketball court. And I love watching him play defense. So I would say him, but it's also because I'm a little bit of a homer.
That's fair enough. You can be as much of a homer as you want. The guy I've got is Batum. I know he hasn't played for Charlotte yet, but I'm a massive fan of Nick Batum. But I like a lot of the guys. I like Al Jefferson. I'm a real big fan of Kemba. I'm a big supporter of him. MKG, you've heard us spout on about him for about 10 minutes already in the show. But Batum is one of my favorite players in the NBA. And now that he's on Charlotte, he becomes my favorite player on the Hornets. But what about all time, Brian? Who's your favorite all-time Charlotte Hornets player? Now, I'm going to cheat with this one, because when I did the Pelicans podcast, I said it was Larry Johnson because I used their Charlotte days. So now that I'm talking Charlotte Hornets, I'm going to use Larry Johnson as well. Even though it's not the same franchise, I don't care. It's still Charlotte Hornets. So Larry Johnson's my guy. Who's your favorite all-time Hornets player?
Yeah, that's tough because it'd probably be LJ for me too.
Okay.
So maybe I can name another one. That's tough. It would be LJ, and I'm trying to think of another one that I really love just to be different.
Alonzo Mourning was good back in the Larry Johnson days as well.
I did love Zoe. Baron, was okay, and I don't know.
Not a Rex Chapman fan.
Sure. I have to admit that I grew up watching a lot more college than NBA, so I'm familiar with like the guys like LJ, but some of these guys are a little before my time. I'll admit I'm getting, don't feel great about it, but I'm also not crazy old. So some of the other guys I don't quite remember that were kind of the '90s guys.
Del Curry was always a favorite of mine back in the day. Nothing to do with any Steph Curry bias now, but I always liked Del Curry as that sixth man coming off the Hornets bench.
Yeah.
And talk about cult heroes in the NBA. There doesn't get much more cult hero than Muggsy Bogues. He was, for obvious reasons, being as big as he was one of the first NBA players I ever saw in person. He came to Australia for an NBA jam session in about 93 or 94 with other players who I have absolutely no idea who they were, but Muggsy was out here, and he was... one of the biggest cult heroes in the NBA. I think he's the shortest player in NBA history, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He'd have to be.
And he's it's funny. He has some awful commercials that he's in around here.
Oh, no, I need to
see
him.
He's in some local commercials. There's one where he's like with like a lawyer, and they like just like try to dunk, and they he's not a great actor. He's a good guy, and I do love Muggsy. Some funny local commercials with Muggsy here.
I need to look those up on YouTube. Brian.
Yeah, they're good.
We are done for the Charlotte Hornets. Unless you've got anything that you really want to get out there about Elliot Williams.
No, I don't think it'll play. I don't think an intriguing player is kind of he's a very smooth wing. I remember watching him in college. I even think that he is kind of like a similar player. Like if you want to like compare him to someone, like even like a Rodney Hood, who is just kind of smooth. It can stroke it from outside a little bit. I just don't think he has the raw skill like that. So I think he's probably always going to be an end of the bench guy, but a guy who's like not going to hurt you anytime if you like need 10 minutes and you need someone who's a solid defender and can hit a shot. I like him better than Lamb. Maybe that I'm just not a Lamb guy. I don't know.
I'll tell you, a guy that I do think that is worth keeping the name in the back of your head before we finish this up is Troy Daniels. I think that he can have somewhat of a role. He's a really decent three-point shooter. He showed that with times in Minnesota and in Houston. He's going to find it hard to get minutes, but if that three-point shooting really stands out, then he's going to get a role to come in there and play 10, 15 minutes and knock down one and a half threes in that sort of time. So he's a name to remember. Don't do anything about drafting him, but just keep an eye on Daniels, because I've heard word come out that they do really like what Daniels can bring to that team.
Yeah, my worries, honestly, with Daniels is that I agree. I mean, he had those huge moments, especially even just in the playoffs when everyone was first introduced to him in Houston, and was like, oh my gosh, here's this guy that just hit a bazillion threes. And obviously the guy can shoot. I don't think he's a great defender, but you know, he brings a lot of value, especially to this team with shooting. But my concern with him is when they acquired him last year, and he didn't play, and he was probably their best shooter on the team. So that makes me worried of, okay, if he was their best shooter and couldn't get playing time last year when they needed shooting so bad, you know, how much upside does he probably really have? And maybe it's a Clifford thing. Maybe it's a Troy just struggling on defense thing. I'm not sure the reason. I would have to ask some guys closer to the team. But that's my concern is, if he didn't get the minutes last year, then I'm a little pessimistic that he would get them this year.
That's a fair point. Now, something you do have to consider when looking at any of these players is if they had the opportunity and they didn't get it, why? And that could be a problem with Daniels. Brian, thank you for coming on. Remind everybody where they can find your work and they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, so they can find me in a variety of places. I write basketball over at NumberFire and at The Hive, which is the Hornets SB Nation. I am over at Fantasy Labs for mostly just all daily fantasy stuff. So we do MLB, and we're doing NFL right now. We're about to release our NBA product. We actually just released our new iPhone application, which is awesome, and we have just really cool models. If you want to try it out, you can use my last name, Mears, M-E-A-R-S, and try it out over at Fantasy Labs. And follow me on Twitter at Brian_Mears. It's with a Y again, at Brian_Mears. And I will tweet my articles. I'll tweet nonsense. I'll tweet my frustration at PJ Harrison taking threes from 12 feet beyond the three-pointer and all sorts of things. So, I appreciate you having me on, Josh. I really enjoyed it. I always love talking Hornets, so I appreciate you asking me to come on.
No problem, Brian. It was great having you on. And don't forget, everybody, to check out the stuff that's happening with all of Brian's work, and then follow him on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, and also find out, go and check out what's happening over at Hardwood Paroxysm. There's a lot of great articles going up over there. A lot of good podcasts over there as well. Friendly Bounce is doing their season preview podcast. Over and Back is doing their top 50 NBA player series as well. And of course, Basketball Monster. There's going to be some articles coming out there in the next few days, some punt building strategy articles. So go and check that out and sign up, become a member. There's some great tools over on Basketball Monster, draft trackers, trade analyzers, all that sort of stuff. There's some really good stuff over there. So I do encourage you to go over there and check out all that's happening over at Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm. Brian, thank you. It was good to talk to you and great to talk Hornets.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And please check out Basketball Monster. That is the number one site that I have gone to for years for fantasy. It's awesome stuff, and I've read the articles since you've just started writing there, right?
Yeah, the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, 6 weeks. Yeah, so I went on and read some of your introduction articles and stuff, and I love those. So so please check that out. Basketball Monster is an awesome site. I have it tabbed and it pulled up all the time. So thanks again, man. Definitely check those sites out. Josh is the man.
Thank you,
Brian. We'll talk in the future.
Most definitely.
All right, man.
That's it, everyone. They're going to have a podcast coming up with Kyle McEwen in the next day or so. We're going to be talking not team preview stuff. We're going to be answering some questions. So if you've got any questions you want to send through to us, we're going to be talking probably an irrational amount of Anthony Bennett. So make sure you're tuning in for that one. We're done with this one. Thank you so much.
Anthony Bennett, who got traded?
No, he got waived. He got picked up by the Raptors. If you haven't, he just got signed by the Raptors.
Traded, yeah,
So that's really interesting. That's crazy. Because the Raptors don't have I just did the Raptors podcast with Russell yesterday. 12 hours later, Anthony Bennett's on the team. They don't have Patrick Patterson's there, but Patrick Patterson's not irreplaceable. He's not irreplaceable. Anthony Bennett's not great, but who knows? It's very, very intriguing to see what's going to happen with Anthony Bennett. So me and Kyle are going to dig into that in tomorrow's show. That's it for this one. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.